You're listening to Unraveling. This podcast brings together a collection of raw, authentic conversations about the messy truth of life. I'm your host, Lauren Barber, and I have created Unraveling to explore both my own and others' inspiring journeys to reconnect back to themselves. Unraveling is an expression of both the highs and the lows of everyday life and covers a medley of topics inspired by my own adventures, from magical mysticism, mental health and menstruation, to self-expression, co-creation, and personal evolution through movement, meditation and intuitive practices that help us remember and reclaim our true essence. Thank you for tuning in and joining me on this beautiful process of unraveling. Now, let's head to the show. Hi everyone, welcome to episode 20. I can't believe we're at episode 20 already of the Unraveling podcast. So I've taken a few weeks off, you may or may not have noticed, and I have been off to Canada and taking some time out just to kind of sit back, get quiet, listen in, and see where this next chapter is going to take me. And I will do a podcast very soon on my experience in Canada with my Yoga Nidra teacher training. But today I am so excited to bring you an interview or a conversation that I had with Vanessa Sage. We actually chatted a few weeks ago, but I'm just airing this episode now. And I have been, well, you won't be surprised to find out that I have kind of come across Vanessa through social media and through the wonderful world of online. She's actually based in Nova Scotia in Canada, but because we've been in contact quite a bit, it sort of feels like we've, you know, been in each other's space for a while. I absolutely love the work that Vanessa does, and she is such an inspiration to me because she speaks and shares so authentically from the heart, and it's raw and it's vulnerable, and it's just the conversation. If you listen into this conversation, you will feel and get so much. I think even the word healing is worth sort of using here, because this conversation, even for me being part of it, was really healing. So I cannot wait for you to listen in. I'm just going to share a little bit more about Vanessa before we dive into the show. Vanessa's work focuses on self-compassion, inner bravery, and discovering the mystery in our everyday lives. She offers spiritual and business mentorship, priestess certification, and an intuitive tarot school to help you enchant your everyday, bring your imagination to life, and listen to your wild soul's calling. Oh, I just love that. She has a PhD in cultural anthropology and spent many years studying Buddhism, pilgrimage, and alternative spirituality as an anthropologist of religion. I literally love this woman so much. I just cannot wait for you to listen to this, and, you know, please do feedback in any way that feels good to you. And let us know how you enjoy the show. So I'm going to stop rambling and I'm going to get straight on now. So let's dive in. Welcome to Unraveling, Vanessa. It's so amazing to have you here today. How are you feeling?
Wonderful. I'm so excited to be here with you. Just feels like such a long time coming. Like, I feel like I've known you for years.
I know. That's the joy of Instagram and social media, right? Yeah. Oh, I know. It's funny because I kind of joke that pretty much most of the people I have on here, I have met through Instagram. So I feel like people that listen probably think I don't get out very much.
I don't get out very much.
It's partly truth, yeah.
I live on the edge. I literally live on the edge of a cliff.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I always see your photos of your walks and of you being out in nature, and I'm like, wow, it looks so expansive there.
It's very expansive, and it's definitely one of the things that keeps me here is I literally, it's a 5-minute walk to the ocean shore.
Wow.
It's takes my breath away every day, all day, you know, so.
Very cleansing, I'd imagine.
Yeah. It's like, it's like my soul needs to be here.
Oh, that's so beautiful. I definitely resonate with that in terms, for me, it's like the woods and the forest and the trees. And at the moment, the orange leaves, the crunchiness.
That's my partner. She loves the forest. I love the forest too. But if we were to, you know, like for me, it's really just that expanded horizon that helps really brings everything into focus for me, where I'm like, I just understand. Yeah. I understand why I'm here. I understand that there's something just so much bigger.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I love that. I think for me, the forest, because it's like there's so much change all the time, and it kind of just, there's that, you can really ground into it, but also there's this such like mystical, magical, constant change there as well. So I don't know if you could just have, you don't often get forests by the sea, do you? So it's kind of hard to get the two.
There is one.
Really? Where?
In Malibu. We found one on the west side of Cape Breton. It's a 2-hour drive from us. And we had driven down one day and didn't realize what was there. And then we finally, and it was really busy, it's tourist stuff. And I guess it was, yeah, just a lunar month ago, we went in, and there's this beautiful beach surrounded by the hills, and then a forest path into the forest with a pond. Like it literally has everything.
Wow.
So that's our new favorite place.
I feel like I need to visit there. I'll just hop on a plane. It's fine. Another one to add to the list. Oh, so I'd love to start by asking you, actually, I always, in previous episodes, I've asked this at the end of the conversation, but I feel like switching it up today and asking you what your the current messy truth is that you're unraveling.
Hmm.
No warm up, just straight into the, you know, tricky ones.
The current messy truth that I am unraveling. What do I want to say about that? I think as I step into leadership more in my life and my work, I am at the same time feeling incredibly vulnerable and messy. And so working with that sense, that tension between that sense of being vulnerable and messy, but also confident and responsible. And so like, what does that look like? And how does, like, what's my role, and how do I stay true to myself? And, you know, I've been really wanting to write a lot more poetry lately. And poetry does not give you the option to be anything but messy and true, you know? And, you know, when the last time I really, really, really was writing poetry, it's not like I haven't written poetry since, was before the social media.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think like many people, there's this tension between being really, really raw and real with yourself and everything. And then also, how do you share that responsibly? How do you, you know, so that's kind of where I'm at right now. Yeah. And even I feel like the words are falling out of my mouth and I don't even have ends of my sentences. Like that's how kind of the unraveling it. Is that even a real sentence, what I just said?
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, because poetry's become something that I never imagined would be important to me, but it's actually probably the way I feel like I can express myself in the most truthful way. I don't know what it is. It kind of, again, it's so vulnerable, but it also feels protective. Does that make sense? Because yeah. People know it's poetry rather than it just being you saying, this is how I feel. For some reason, I feel it.
That. Yeah. And just like saying what's true without having a week-long vulnerability hangover. Like, I would really love to get to that
Yeah.
I don't know if that's just me, but it's definitely a thing that I find myself saying things late at night, especially, and then waking up with that vulnerability hangover, and I'm like, oh, okay, well, I said it. It's
Yeah.
true.
Yeah. Yeah, there's this sort of you get brave for a moment and you sort of share it, and then it's like, oh, can I take it back? And then by that point, if you've shared it on an Instagram post, people have started to comment on it or something, and you're like, oh, it's out there now. But each time I feel like each time I do that, it like there's another layer of healing for me and possibly for others as well.
I think so. And you get more resilient and stronger, and things that may have put you under the covers a year ago don't anymore, and
Yeah.
so yeah, I think important to express that.
Absolutely. So I'm curious to you said at the beginning about stepping into sort of the leadership role. What does that mean to you? Kind of what how because I'm often I kind of I slightly fear that word leader, being a leader or leadership, even though it equally excites me. So how does it show up for you? What do you sort of see as a leader and yourself in that role?
I've had to think a lot about it. I, for the last over 4 years, I've been running priestess training, and in the last 2 years, priestess training has really been much more about mindful, compassionate leadership. And what does that look like? And lots of people are going to tell you lots of things about what a leader looks like. I could turn my phone on right now and find a whole bunch of messages about what that is. What I notice is that they're still very much rooted in the patriarchy, even when women are saying them. And so what is it, how can we unravel this? How can we actually stand in our power as individuals, but also understanding our relationship with each other? The courage and the strength that it takes to do that. And whether or not you are, leading groups, or you're in a leadership position at work, or in your community, you're still a leader in your life. So what is being a leader in your life look like? And for me, that starts with kind of radical honesty, with a choice to I am a rebel, and I do not necessarily do what other people tell me to do, even when I'm being told that this is what being a responsible leader is. And so for me also, it's about looking within and saying, is that true? Is that true? Just because people say something doesn't mean it's true. Just because a lot of people say something doesn't mean it's true. And just because I say something doesn't mean it's true. Like, but what's true for me, and what's honest for me, and what's strong for me? And also as a highly sensitive, that takes a lot. It takes a lot. And I'm also kind of, I've been very, very quiet in lots of ways, but then also just kind of starting to speak out about things. And again, it's that messy unraveling of even leadership. So, I really begin with power from like within, and then how do you work with people, but with where everyone has full power within themselves. That to me is the most interesting kind of leadership, where we're all together as leaders. And we trust each other's innate ability to know what is right for ourselves, and then have a conversation.
I love that you sort of started that with, you know, it's you're the leader of your own life. I mean, I think it, that instantly makes me think, oh, okay, I can be a leader because I can lead my own life. I don't have to, like, I think it's just, it, you know, it's, again, it's unraveling the meanings behind, placed behind certain words that maybe, as you said, they're not even true. They're true under a, I don't know, quotation marks, or because society says that a leader looks in a certain way or behaves a certain way. But actually, yeah, like how do we lead our own life? That's a powerful question. So how do you lead your own life?
How do I lead my own life? How do I lead my own life? I begin with what's true in myself. And recognizing the messy truths, you know, the stuff you don't necessarily always want to see, right? Mm-hmm. I have strong values that I live by. That doesn't always mean that, you know, in my life I haven't made mistakes or I haven't, you know, I haven't acted out of integrity. I think we all have. But when I come back to my values, when I come back to what really matters to me, that's what's important. It's not falling down. Everyone falls down. I think I fell down last week, you know, everyone falls down. But what at my core do I truly, truly, how do I really, really want to be in the world? That's what matters. And the other thing I've been working with a lot, and it's kind of top of mind right now because we just led a workshop in Priestess about it, but we work with a model of kind of unhooking ourselves from the triangle of villain, victim, and hero. So that's radical. That's a radical shift from the way that we are constantly being told about how to relate to people. Constantly, everywhere you look at the news, open any paper, listen to any news story right now, and it is hinged on hero, villain, and victim. Mm-hmm. And so how do you lead from that place? How do you live from that place? That's what I'm interested in. I'm really interested in being curious about that. I want to live in a world where I can embrace the villain and love the villain, where I cannot be a victim and where I don't feel like I need to be a hero.
Mm, that's such an amazing way of looking at it, because I've never really kind of taken it on that perspective before. So that's pretty powerful.
I'll just do a whole hour on that.
Yeah, I reckon we probably could. I'd love to dive in deeper to that. I'd love to first just find out a little bit more about the sort of some of the big truths that have played a part in your journey to get to the person you are today. You know, where, you know, what have you had to unravel to get to this place? I'm sure there are, you know, I'm sure we could talk for hours about all the magical adventures you've been on. What would you say are the sort of the pivotal truths in your story so far?
It's probably not a magical adventure, although it's in some ways. National Coming Out Day just happened last week. It got me thinking about, you know, my own story, my own path. And, you know, I knew that I was a lesbian in my teens. And I probably would have known earlier if we lived in a world where it was I think we actually do now for many, many people. But when I was growing up, that wasn't an option. And I shoved myself in the closet. Shoved. Door closed. And I was married for, I was in a, we never actually legally got married because gay marriage was not legal and I would not get married legally, would not take that when others couldn't have it. But we were together for 15 years and, you know, I met him when I was 17, just a couple of weeks before I turned 17. And you know, he saw me through like major anxiety, major depression. I was agoraphobic for many years. Like, I think in lots of things happened in my life, but one of the things was shoving myself in the closet and feeling like I was wrong and feeling completely trapped in my own making in lots of ways. And so my early 30s, I came out and we actually had an open relationship for a little while. I kind of came out as bisexual so when I talk about honesty, it's coming from that place of not being honest with myself, right, for a very long time. And, you know, of course I forgive myself and love myself. Like, you know, I did my best. There's, you know, it's okay. The moment, I remember very, very clearly the moment when I came out to myself. I was at a coffee shop and I was writing in my journal. I filled so many journals in that time. And, you know, I was just so free and so alive and so happy, but also so terrified. Because in order to admit this, my entire life was going to have to change. And I was in graduate school at the time. I was in my first year of my PhD. Looking back on it, the planner in me would say, like, what were you? Not a good time. Not a good time.
Is it ever?
Time. And I called him, and I've actually never told this story publicly. Called him and I said, I think I'm a lesbian. What does that mean? And he said, I think that means we can't be together anymore. And I said, yeah, I guess that's what it means. And we had a hand fasting. It was a really beautiful separation. Still very, very good friends. And it was the easiest and hardest thing I ever had to do. And I remember a couple of weeks later, I was in Toronto at Pride, because, you know, just throw yourself in. And I just felt completely unrecognizable to myself. And in some ways wrong, because I basically kind of dropped into a culture that I didn't completely understand or even fit into. And it's actually taken a lot of strength for me to stand in that community as myself, not trying to be anything or anybody else. You know, I remember going through a period where, you know, I had to look in the mirror and see a lesbian looking back. Well, I don't need to do that anymore. I just look in the mirror and I see myself, and that's enough. You know, at every step, even when I left academia as well, I mean, it was, again, leaving everything I'd known and everything I worked for into this, like, what am I doing? I didn't know anything about business. I remember a business guy did a project on me, which was just kind of funny, in my first year. And he sat me down and he looked at me and he said, I'm really worried about you.
Oh, that's confidence giving.
But you know what? He was afraid. He was afraid to jump. He was afraid to jump off the cliff. And I remember in that moment thinking, yeah, you should be worried about me right now. I don't, but I'm not worried because I know what I can do. I know my potential and you just don't know it right now. So that's okay.
Mm.
So I don't know if that answers the question.
Yeah, I mean, thank you for sharing like all of that. So honestly, it's beautiful to hear that side of the story, I guess. And I'm sure there are loads of other elements as well that have kind of brought you to this place. But I'd love to know a little bit more about, so you said sort of moving from academia into what do you describe, how do you describe your work now compared to that? Because academia is, you know, I know it's the whole labeling thing, I guess, and that's something I'm unraveling still in my own journey, you know, like, what do I call myself? And kind of like you were saying, you know, you have to look in the mirror and actually just see yourself rather than a lesbian or a yoga teacher or whatever labels you put.
Exactly.
But how do you, you know, when people ask you, because people do ask, you know, what do? How do you respond to that now?
That's been an interesting process as well, because there was a time when I would just say, I have a PhD in cultural anthropology and now I have an online business, and leave it there. Sometimes when I was feeling really quite, I don't know, I think there's a really great English, British kind of saying, stroppy or something.
Stroppy, yeah.
Yeah, I'd say I'm a priestess.
then, very sassy.
Like, I remember in the Halifax airport once I said that, and I, you know, it's funny because like she seemed really alternative and I thought I could say it, and she just kind of like literally shifted away. So, you know, you live with that, right? You live with the, but you can say it on the internet. I can say this on the internet and it's like, take me or leave me. That's a, like that. I love that.
Like, yeah.
I don't even have a business card, but I have a website. That's kind of my business card. But now I kind of read the person, kind of look at them and say, okay, well, how much can you handle and what am I willing to put myself, what am I willing to say? If it's the dentist, I don't need to say what I do. A security guard at an airport, I don't need to get into it. But now I just say I'm a spiritual and business mentor and I run a priestess program and a tarot school. And I just say it matter of fact. Yeah.
Love it. Perfect. So I've had this conversation with Vix quite a few times from New Age Hipster and about being a priestess, because I still, like, she constantly says, like, you're a priestess to me, and I'm like, I don't know if I, like, I don't even know what a priestess is really. So can you give me your take on that? Like, how did you decide you were a priestess, or was it just that, you know, it just arrived? I don't know. What's the process?
Kicking and screaming.
Yeah.
I mean, I joke about that just because, you know, it was, I feel like there's several things that I do in my life that I've done kind of kicking and screaming into. Like, it wasn't even my choice. Like, something other than me, whether that's source or goddess or, you know, whatever, has just been saying, I'm sorry you're uncomfortable with this, but you're going to have to stand in it. And you get to define it in different ways and you get to, you know, pull it apart and all of this kind of stuff. But right now, this is what you need to do. You'd think I'd have a really great answer to what a priestess is. But I actually don't like defining it. I intentionally don't define it. And I just hold the space for people to discover what that is for them. So what it is for me is going to be different than what it is for someone else. When I heard you talking earlier, like before when we were chatting, I'm like, yeah, you're doing priestess stuff. But I just can't own it yet. But I wouldn't necessarily say that to you, right? Like, you know, you get to decide what it is you call yourself and how you understand your own work. For me, it's about holding space for people. Holding space for people to really embody their true power. And I know that gets overused a lot, but I don't know another way to talk about it. I don't, just because it gets said a lot doesn't mean it's not important and it's not true. It's really important and true that we find who we are inside and can go out into the world as powerful beings. You know, that's so important. And, you know, there's also a sense of being a conduit to the divine, which I am just now kind of coming out of my own closet around. You know, I had someone ask me, you know, will you channel? And I said, yeah, I do, but there's something that's stopping me from really truly owning that. So for me, stepping into my power is actually my unraveling right now is going to be actually owning that and saying, you know what, I do receive messages. And as I'm saying this, my throat is red, right? And it's time to start saying, you know, time to start speaking them. But really, I just hold space for people to go through their own transformation and to find themselves and to find themselves in community and do all the beautiful goddess spiritual work at the same time, you know, like.
That sounds amazing. I'll take that as a definition. Yeah, I think it's, I guess, yeah, it's just, I think it's understanding, again, it comes back down to the connotations we have around certain words and language and things like that. And I find language quite fascinating, and I like to, whenever I'm blogging about something, I find things come up and I start to then look at the definition, and then I start to think like, okay, if I looked at this as its pure definition rather than the way that the world has told me it's supposed to be, I actually, it can change the perspective on things. So I think, I guess it's just about being open and trusting yourself that you know that your answer to that question or to whatever you're calling yourself is right, because it's yours, and it doesn't matter if it doesn't make sense to other people.
Yeah.
It's definitely something I'm unraveling at the moment.
I remember Vix, I think she had posted a page, she'd done a priestess page, and I think I can remember it was like almost a year and a half ago, but there was like roller skates, and like it was just so awesome, because, and that's kind of like, I celebrate that when people start pulling it apart and saying and just being themselves and also saying like, this is what a priestess can look like. I love that. Mm. Because I think one of the things that happens in that kind of world is, it's like, you get like, do I fit in? And it's similar to that when I was looking in the mirror and like, can I recognize myself as a lesbian? And what was I doing there in that moment, right? I was trying to see what lesbian looked like to other people and put it on myself. But I don't need to do that. I never needed to do that. No one ever needs to do that. And we don't need to do that with priestess. We don't need to do that with witch. We don't need to do that with any of these labels. And we can still be them. We can still embody them in our own way.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah. So do you have any, what are your sort of practices? Like, I know you use your tarot, you obviously have quite a few oracle cards. I can see them in the background. but, you know, what are your kind of rituals and practices that you use to embody the priestess, or embody whoever you are showing up, or embody Vanessa every single day?
I don't do anything every single day. But I am a Buddhist as well. Like, I took refuge, and it's becoming less and less and less a part of my path, but definitely part of my spiritual journey and a huge part of my spiritual history. And so I still very much meditate, you know, just insight, simple breath meditation. And honestly, my walks are a huge part of my spiritual practice. And of course, you know, there's always cards somewhere, everywhere. we use them together as a couple, use them every single, but still probably not every day, but most days I will pull cards, because I'm not in here every day. I'm not in my office every day. Sometimes I'm down, we're out and about doing adventures and things like that. But yeah, I pull cards to help guide me through the day. I will pull more cards throughout the day. Some cards will stay there all week. Stacy and I will pull cards to make decisions, to help communicate with each other in our relationship, to really help get to that radical honesty and truth about what's really happening for us. Yeah, so many cards. Probably too many cards.
Is that even possible?
Oh, I don't know. I know. No.
Can always have another deck.
People just keep making really amazing decks.
I know. It's so, like, it's such beautiful creative outlets as well. I love all the designs, yeah, and all the artwork that's coming out through all these, like, divination tools. It's beautiful.
And I like supporting. I really do like supporting artists. I mean, really, this is what's happening right now is artists are making decks, and you know, I think it's important to support them when I can, and if I feel called. I'm not, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's beautiful. So in your priestess program, what does, like, in terms of priestess training, what is that actually kind of, I know you said you hold space for people to sort of come back to their power and to connect back with their truth. But how, you know, if somebody wanted to start this journey into becoming they're already a priestess, right? But into owning that sort of side of them, how would you kind of suggest they begin that exploration? If they're getting this little call, whether it's priestess, whether it's goddess, whether it's just maybe even embracing perhaps the more feminine ways of bringing, you know, coming into their life, whether it's in business, whether it's just for themselves, what would be your, you know, suggestions for exploring?
That's a really wonderful question. I mean, part of me wants to recommend a book, but I don't want to do that. I'm not going to do that. Yeah, I mean, I can tell you what we do in the program, but I think part of it is, I don't think that's the question. I think what you're asking is, you know, for anyone right now listening, what can you do? What can you do to start kind of more fully embracing that? And I want to say that to just get still and, you know, put your hand on your heart and ask yourself what's true for you right now. And do that as often as you can. And if you can look out and see the world around you, and notice its changes and its cycles, and not get hung up on what it's supposed to look like. And just be with it as it is. This is priestessing to me, is being with the world as it is.
Mm. That's really beautiful. When you did that and I put my hand on my heart, the first words that came to me was, "I'm scared." Which I just, yeah, I think that's, you know, that's being truthful to myself at the moment. You know, I don't know what's ahead. None of us do. And yeah, today, day two of my cycle, yeah, there's some fear coming up there. Not sure what it's about, but just, yeah, there's that kind of uncertainty. And I guess for anybody that when the answer isn't necessarily what you want to hear, how would you hold space for someone to kind of move through that process with grace?
I mean, the first thing is to just say, okay, I'm scared. And you know, feel the fullness of that. You know, have freak out, you know, if you need to, or cry deeply, or, you know, just really truly acknowledging, it's like, okay, I'm scared. not making anything wrong. If nothing, when we ask ourselves what's true, the answer is never wrong, ever. And, you know, wrapping yourself up in love from the best part of you, from the part of you, you know, and whether you need to be that conduit and call in the divine in whatever way you understand that to be, or you just need to wrap yourself up in the most loving hug and embrace that lets you know, I see you, I love you. And do that as often as you need to.
So when someone is in that space where love for themselves feels really hard, because I think maybe I've seen you talk about this. I think I've talked about this. Like, it's sometimes really hard to come from that place of like authentic self-love, because there are so many parts of us that have been suppressed or hidden, or we've hidden from ourselves. It's, you know, if someone can't give that love to themselves, how do you, you know, in your own experience, you know, how do you still nurture and nourish yourself when, I guess it comes down to sort of, I've talked before, it's sort of starting with self-like when self-love feels too distant. But are there any things that you have found in your journey to kind of coming back to that real love that you could share that might offer some support or guidance for anyone that's in that space?
I go to the earth. So, you know, touching the earth, I remember the day back in November when that president was elected. I turned off the phone and the everything, and I went to the ocean and I sat on the cliffs and I watched the birds fly. And I did that for hours. And I just, so whether that's from within or from without, right? Because I'm talking about an outward example, like the world, what is happening? but when you were talking, it's just, just touching the earth, just the earth does not judge you. The earth does not care if you made that mistake or you hurt that person or you hurt yourself. It just is. And I find being in a place where that's true changes everything. So giving yourself the experience of being with a non-judgmental, loving presence. And look, the earth storms sometimes. But it just is, right? But it doesn't make itself wrong for that. Sometimes I look at my cats and they have a big fight. And then they just sleep. And, you know, maybe 2 minutes later, they're cuddled up. What would it be like if humans were like this? If we were just like every once in a while, like we just acknowledge the fact that we're like, yeah. Yeah. And then like, okay, that happened. Now I'm going to nap, you know?
Rest is very healing. Yeah, I guess it's like, I've sort of spoken about it before, but this sort of, I think as humans, we suppress those feelings, and then they do, you know, they might explode or they might implode. Whereas animals, they, you know, they are very, you know, they react and then they shake it off and then it's back to normal, you know, like it's like it never happened. Whereas we don't tend to do that as humans as much. I mean, some of us more than others, you know, we all have our different way of processing things, but yeah, I love that you said about the earth, you know, just not judging, because it's a really good reminder that, you know, even when, as where I go, whenever I need to process anything, whether I'm happy, whether I'm sad, whatever it is. And that kind of perhaps explains why. I've never really thought of it in that way, but just because it's, there's no judgment, there's no criticism. It just sees you for you. And maybe that's why when I'm in nature, and probably the same for you, that's when our innermost truths do show themselves, because it's a reflection.
Yeah. I would love to start shift, actually, now that we're, oh, this is something new. I never thought this out loud or even said it to myself. I would love to shift my work more and more and more so that it's outside more, where that connection is. And we were talking before about the pilgrimages and whether or not yes or no, and I'm just hearing this big yes, because it's like there's something so healing about being, it's not just about being in sacred sites. The whole world is sacred. We are sacred. Everything is sacred. I mean, go for a walk and you're on a pilgrimage. Okay.
Yeah. I've got goosebumps. I've felt so the same with my work. Is like nothing, no space has felt right, because the only space that feels right to me is out in nature. But yet in my head, I'm like, I can't possibly make my work in nature, because nature's not mine. Nature's not a place I hire. You know, it's like, there's all these resistances, but that I know that the most healing times for me is when I'm in nature, and sometimes with people, sometimes without, sometimes on my own or with the dog. But it's the most magical, transformative part of, well, you know, part of us. And even if you can't access big open fields, forests, whatever, like even the smallest part can connect you. And yeah, I think it's the most healing thing we can do.
Absolutely. And I mean, I work with people who deal with chronic illness. They live in urban centers. And, you know, we really just encourage them to look out, because that's there, right? You can choose to look out, or step out. Because I think that we get this idea that, you know, nature is this, you know, and, you know, we've been expansive, this something outside of ourselves that can be inaccessible to a lot of people, that kind of idea of nature. But I actually discovered I really discovered my love of this through when I started working with Enchant Your Every Day while I was living in an urban center in the downtown core. And when I had a pulmonary embolism, which for 9 months, that meant like even walking to the bathroom took my breath away and was really exhausting. I wasn't actually able to go out. I went out for doctor's appointments and things like that. Stacy used to bring home photos for me, because my favorite thing was to go out on enchantment walks and take photos. And she would go for me and she would take photos of things she saw.
Wow.
And I remember I would always just try and look out the window, or unfortunately we were on the second floor in an apartment, and with the pulmonary embolism, literally going down those stairs would have knocked me out for a couple of days. So it wasn't actually even possible for me to step out. But there were ways in which I could bring it in. Mm. People insane that year.
But I mean, you know, I guess in some ways it probably makes you appreciate it even more, even those little snippets. And I suppose even just looking out and looking up at the sky gives you that being in touch, like just even if we can see a slice of hopefully blue sky between a skyscraper, I don't know, you know, like I know that not everybody has the gift of big expansive skies, and yeah. But it's there, just knowing it's there, I suppose, can be enough.
The way the clouds reflect in the skyscrapers sometimes, that's really beautiful. I remember going to the Tate Modern. Have you been there?
Years ago. I mean, I feel like I'm a really bad British person because I'm about an hour from it and I haven't been for years and years. But yes, I have been.
There's so much for you to do there, though. <There's> just...
I know, and I do none of it. Because I'm like, I go into London and I'm like, oh, get me back to Kent, get me back to the countryside.
Well, I remember going to the Tate Modern, the Frida Kahlo exhibit was happening at the time. And that was pretty life-changing. And that felt like a spiritual experience. But what I wasn't expecting, I was expecting to love the Frida Kahlo exhibit. But I've never really been that interested in modern art. It's never really made a whole lot of sense to me. And we were walking through the exhibit. We kind of did the whole thing. And I had that same experience where I wasn't quite taking it in. I didn't quite get it. But when I left, after immersing myself in that for hours, when I left the building, the world looked different. And it's never looked the same.
Wow.
Because all of a sudden there was art everywhere.
It's funny how it integrates into in different ways, isn't it? Yeah. I often feel for me when I experience something, I don't necessarily absorb it when I'm in it. It's only afterwards that it lands. And I find that whenever I do training or anything like that, it's always, I'm not that person usually that is in it and goes, oh, I've just had like this massive epiphany. It always comes after for me.
Even like meditation retreats, like I am the worst meditator. I'm in so much pain. Still, you know, painful. And I remember asking my meditation teacher, I'm like, is this normal? And but what I ended up finding was that afterwards I had so much more strength and confidence and calm. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I actually needed to feel tortured for
Wow. I bet a lot of people can resonate with that though.
There are some meditators, right, that they sit down and they're just in a state of bliss. And I remember I was at a retreat with someone. It was a silent retreat. And, you know, at the end, we have this moment where we get to talk. You feel like you've known that the people you've been sitting next to really intimately. It's really interesting. So she said, it was a really hard retreat for me because I experienced a lot of pain and I never do. And she'd been meditating for like 20 years.
Wow.
And I thought, wow, imagine to like have that experience of never feeling pain. And then, because that for me, it would be an unusual retreat for me to not feel the pain. I don't know why I'm telling that story, but yeah, I think there's something about afterwards realizing.
Yeah. I think I guess it depends on you as a person and how you learn and how you let things absorb. And sometimes the experience when you're in it can be so overwhelming that you almost don't have the space to let it sit and land. And then afterwards that you come out into the air or you come out into, you have a bit more space or whatever it is. And it's just like, oh, there it is. Maybe even 6 months later. I would love to know this is a new question for the podcast, but it's kind of the direction my work is going in. And I'd love to know what it is that you are currently remembering about yourself that you had previously forgotten.
I am remembering there's a couple of things that are coming up. One is that I'm a writer and I need to honor that more in my life. It's one of the things that I drop when I'm busy. And I don't want to do that anymore. And I think the other thing I'm remembering is I remember when I came out, I was just so joyful. And like, I literally was doing cartwheels, and I hadn't done cartwheels since I was a child. And, you know, I was really confident. Like I used to be the one who would like, let's have coffee, let's have sex. I was just really, really confident. And then I got really hurt and shrunk back in. And I've been remembering that spark again lately.
Wow. That's beautiful. I feel like you're definitely mirroring a lot of my unraveling at the moment. The writing, especially, because I'm exactly the same. It's the thing that brings me probably the most joy. But it is the first thing that gets dropped. I don't know why. Why did we do this?
I got a Grammarly report saying, like, in the last 21 weeks, it had checked. I can't remember the number of words, but it worked out to be 600 pages of writing. And I did not write a book. And I'm like, how? You know what I mean? Like, it's just me. Like, I am writing, but like shifting. What and where? Even half of that would have been a book.
Yeah. It could have been a small leaflet.
A chapbook.
Yeah. It's funny how we, I think, yeah, the things that, I certainly know that the things that will probably, I guess, my writing is very healing to me. And I suppose there is, you know, I guess an element of fear of what it will bring up when, because I can't just write for this, you know, for the sake of it. And I can't just write, you know, five ways to, I don't know, ground yourself, or I can't just do these kind of how to kind of pieces. They're always just kind of, I don't know, my heart spewed onto a page. So I suppose there is a fear of being, it's the vulnerable thing. I guess we're coming full circle back to the vulnerability.
I think we should both like look at our Instagram posts and any blog posts that we may have written, although I let that go too. And like, I bet there's a book there, at least a leaflet.
Yeah, at least a few pages. Yeah, I think maybe this is the pivotal moment. This is the turning point of actually owning it, saying this out loud, perhaps saying, you know, owning that part of me a little bit more. I do want to write a book. I think the resistance for me is like, I don't know what the book's about. And so I just don't even start, which of course is never going to materialize a book.
Or I think I need to have it all mapped out beforehand, like I did with my dissertation. And even then that didn't even work out the way I thought it would. Let's write.
Let's write. Okay, we'll make a pact. Let's write. it's such a gorgeous conversation. I love how it's kind of ebbed and flowed and gone in all sorts of different directions. And I think we've maybe both had a few little aha moments as well. So just before we wrap up, I would love to just hear about anything you've got coming up, or if you want to share where people can find out a bit more and connect with you, please do.
You can find me at VanessaSage.com and on Instagram, Vanessa Sage Priestess. And I have a 3-year tarot school that is open for enrollment right now. It starts January 7th, and I'm taking applications at the moment. And if you head over to my website and go over to Love Letters, sign up, I send out Sunday letters, and there's also an invitation to join my Willing to Live in Magic group. We have so many beautiful things happening there, and we're actually going to be starting to do bi-monthly community calls for the group as well. So lots of different ways to connect, and I would absolutely love to connect with you.
Amazing. And just so for my own interest and for anyone else that's interested, what does 3 years of tarot school look like? Because that's intriguing. What do you cover in that?
Well, the first year is tarot intuitive, and so we're looking at the cards really in depth. So we are going to look at the meanings, and we're going to prioritize our own intuition first. So that first year was a really great foundation for tarot study in general. So really understanding the deck, and really honing into your own intuitive abilities. And then the next year is tarot healer, and we're kind of diving further into kind of soul work, a little bit more on shadow work, and we're going to look at a couple of other tarot systems, diving deeper into tarot history. I kind of geek out about that sometimes. And also just kind of how to bring healing to your life through tarot. And then the third year is tarot soul guide, and that's kind of bringing that work out to others, whether you're using cards in your mentoring or coaching, or you want to read professionally, looking at ethics and all of that kind of great stuff. And I think that that's the year we kind of dive into alchemy and mysticism as well.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
There's a community level and a professional level. So if you already know you want to be kind of doing this work professionally, there's a professional level, which includes kind of highly personalized feedback on your check-ins as you go through. And yeah, we're holding a small container, so there's like a maximum enrollment, and really just also kind of going through the process over several years in community. What is it? Because I will be changing in the next 3 years. I'm sure every single person.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I've just seen happening in my community up until now is that people are staying this long anyway. And to like actually see what's happened in their lives, watching people's dreams come true, and holding people through loss. And it's such a beautiful thing. And there's lots of community connection calls, and my partner and I, we hold the space in the Facebook group, and we really try and make that a special sacred place for people.
It sounds wonderful. So I would really encourage everyone to connect with Vanessa because I love getting your love letters in the well, I think it's just changed to Sundays, hasn't it? but they're really beautiful, very from the heart, and I love the, you do share the quotes and just little nuggets that kind of you're like, oh yeah, penny drop moments. So yeah, definitely worth signing up for those.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time today. It's been an honor to share space and to unravel with you. And yeah, I'm sure at some point who knows where unraveling is going to go, but I'm sure we'll probably be back at some point to share space again. And yeah, I look forward to it.
Oh, thanks for having me. This has been really, really wonderful.
Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Unraveling. If you have enjoyed this conversation and want to listen more, then please subscribe to the show and share it with any friends who might enjoy the journey too. To continue the adventures and connect with other people who are also enjoying the show, don't forget to join the Unraveling Deeper community on Facebook. Here you can delve deeper into some of the topics discussed on the show and also get the chance to ask questions for future episodes. I will also be sharing additional resources that are supporting me in my own unraveling. Just head to facebook.com/groups/unraveling deeper. You can also get in touch with me via my Instagram at laurenbarber.co or through my website www.laurenbarber.co. Until next time, keep trusting the beautifully chaotic process of unraveling.